And welcome back to Cool Science Radio. I'm John Wells. I'm here with Lynn Ware Peak. Our first guest this morning is Dr. Khan Shlobozhikov. He's the author of Chasing Dr. Doolittle, Learning the Language of Animals. His early research has shown a complex communicative ability of the prairie dog alarm calls, and additional research proves that a number of animals have language and can talk. It's just that we don't listen. So Khan's goal is to help people listen to animals and understand that your dog and other animals, well, they have much to tell us. Khan, welcome back to Cool Science Radio.
Thank you, John. I'm glad to be back. Thank you for having me.
Oh, we're delighted to have you back. Maybe you can start and sort of lay the groundwork by telling us about the different elements of the prairie dog alarm call and your research.
Sure. When I first started working with prairie dogs, I knew that they had just what I thought was a single alarm call, which was basically something that sounded like a bird chirp, sort of cheep, cheep, cheep. And I thought that that was just a panic response, that it was something that they would give whenever they would see anything that would alarm them, like any kind of predator, kind of like we would yell eek if we happened to see something that scared us and we didn't really have the words to verbalize what it was. But the more that I studied the alarm call, the more I realized that there was a lot of complexity in it. So initially, I thought, well, maybe they are communicating something about terrestrial predators like coyotes versus aerial predators like hawks. And so my team and I set up experiments, and we found that indeed there was that element of communication in there, that they could tell each other, this is a terrestrial predator versus this is an aerial predator. But there is still a lot of variation that I couldn't figure out why that variation was there. So I set up some experiments where we looked at whether the variation was due to the prairie dogs telling each other about the species of predator, such as hawk, such as coyote, such as domestic dog, such as human. We did some experiments and found that, sure enough, the prairie dogs actually could communicate to each other whether it is a coyote or a domestic dog or a human or a hawk. But there is still variation in there, which I couldn't figure out why that variation was there. And then I had an insight that maybe they're actually describing the individual features of the predator. So we did some experiments using humans and using dogs, and we found that indeed the prairie dogs could describe the individual features of a human. So they can tell what color of clothes the human is wearing, they can describe the general size and shape of the human, they can describe something about the speed of travel of the human. Same thing with dogs. They could describe the coat color of dogs, they could describe the general body shape of dogs, how quickly the dogs are moving. And we started looking at the structure of the calls and found that the calls are made up of what humans call phonemes. You probably may not know what a phoneme is, but a phoneme is the smallest unit of sound in human speech, and these phonemes are combined into what are called morphemes, which are the smallest units of meaning, which are then combined into words. And we found that just like with human language, prairie dog calls are composed of phonemes, which occur in different ratios according to what kind of predator it is. And we also found, amazingly enough, that they could produce calls to objects that they've never seen before. We found with some experiments that they could produce a call for a black oval. They could also produce calls for triangles and for circles, none of which they've ever seen before. So just like humans can form new words, like we say cell phone, which 50 years ago would have been a meaningless concept to somebody, prairie dogs can manufacture new words like black oval, like triangle, like circle. So we found also that, amazingly enough, in one experiment, we had a person who walked out with a shotgun, and he fired the shotgun, And the prairie dogs had a part of the call that they attached to that person over and above the description of his general size and shape that apparently coded for the shotgun. And for the length of the experiment, about a month, whenever that person walked out, even though he no longer carried a shotgun, they always appended that particular acoustic structure to that person that we believe codes for gun. So it became man carrying a gun. So the bottom line is that what we found with prairie dog alarm calls, it's a very sophisticated animal language, and it is probably the most sophisticated animal language that has been decoded so far. And it fits all of the criteria that linguists say you have to find in a language in order to call it a language.
So I'm quite comfortable
now talking about prairie dogs having language.
Con, this is all so interesting. And at home, I set a mouse trap the other day, and the mice outsmarted my mouse trap. But I've never given rodents, I've never attributed such intelligence to them. And I'm wondering, why prairie dogs, and why did you not start with those animals that, you know, we've domesticated, like dogs and cats?
Well, actually, it's a two-part answer. One is that I started working with prairie dogs because they happen to be around in large numbers around my university. So I could go a couple of miles away and set up experiments, whereas a lot of my colleagues had to go thousands of miles away to places like Africa and so on to work with lions and tigers and so on. So for me, it was a very simple process to work with prairie dogs. And initially, I actually wasn't interested in their communication. I really didn't know anything about their communication. I was interested in their social system, which wasn't very well known at that time. They lived in colonies called towns. They divided up the colony into territories, and each territory defended the boundaries of its territory against other prairie dogs living on other territories, and I was interested in finding out how all of that worked. And so the sounds were just kind of incidental until I started recording them a little bit and thought, this is pretty interesting. I wonder what's going on here. So I got sort of sucked into that kind of through the back door. And the reason that I didn't work with dogs and cats is that when I first started working with prairie dogs, it really wasn't fashionable among animal behavior researchers to work with dogs and cats because they were considered to be domestic animals, not really real animals, the way that lions and tigers and prairie dogs are.
Yeah, so they wouldn't have to protect themselves against predators and therefore may not have as developed a lexicon?
Right, and not only that, but there was kind of a way of looking down on domestic animals, that in general, they weren't really very interesting for whatever reason, that they weren't living in a really wild environment. And so therefore, they really didn't have the bag of behavioral tricks that you would expect from animals living in a wild environment. So for a long time, actually until about maybe 10 years ago, animal behaviorists didn't study dogs and cats. A few did here and there, but we really had relatively little in the way of scientific literature about the behavior of dogs and cats. And now it's expanding exponentially. Labs, particularly in Europe, are studying dogs and cats, and they're doing lots of experiments, and we're finding out that dogs and cats really have a very complex behavioral repertoire which we really didn't know about and really didn't care about 20 or 30 years ago when I first started working with prairie dogs.
Right, yeah. If you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, we're having a conversation with Dr. Con Shlobozhikov. He's the author of Chasing Dr. Doolittle, Learning the Language of Animals. Back to prairie dogs. You had mentioned to me once that prairie dogs really don't move around that much, so that really helped with your study. You could go back and actually listen to the same prairie dog, but talk about the different dialects that they have as you move away from one grouping to another.
Yes, we looked at the acoustic structure of the alarm calls in colonies that were close by versus colonies that were far apart. And we found that just like with human dialects, colonies that were relatively close to each other, a mile or two away, had sort of mild variations in the alarm calls, kind of like humans with mild kinds of dialects. And as you moved farther and farther away, dialects became more and more pronounced. So even though it was still a recognizable coyote call 100 miles away or 200 miles away, it was pronounced differently, kind of like what perhaps in the United States, you know, somebody in California might pronounce dog as dog, and somebody in the South in Georgia might say dog or something along those lines.
Right.
And so in a recent study that we're just preparing, we have shown that there's kind of a linear difference or linear progression in the change in dialect as you get farther and farther away from any particular home.
And like humans, prairie dogs can be a little sneaky. You told the story about a couple prairie dogs that are fighting. One's getting the daylights beat out of it, and the other one's winning the fight. And the one that's losing the fight makes the call for a coyote, you know, makes the alarm call saying a coyote's coming. And the one winning the fight figures a coyote's coming, and he runs back to his hole. It's kind of a rope-a-dope, huh?
That's right. Yeah, that really amazed us when we saw that because, you know, like you, Lynn, I did not really think of rodents as being intellectual giants. really, when we first started. I mean, I kind of thought of them as little robots and automatons that work on programs of instinct. And I certainly never thought that a prairie dog could come up with a deceptive call like that, you know, and put it all together in his head. Oh, if I call for coyote, maybe this guy will get frightened and leave me alone and run to his burrow. And sure enough, that's what happened. The guy ran to his burrow and allowed the other guy who was getting the stuffing beaten out of him to retreat back to his own burrow. So it's just amazing the kind of complexity that these animals have. And I think what it is it's indicative of how much we underestimate animals. Even I, as a animal behaviorist and scientist, underestimated these animals initially quite a bit. And we continue to underestimate their abilities, just as we continue to underestimate the ability of these animals to have language. If you look at almost any book that talks about human advancement and so on, you will find that at some point in the book says, we humans are the only ones with language. Animals are not capable of language, and so therefore there's a great divide between us humans and the rest of the animals, which they, poor things, can't breach. Well, we now know from my book, Chasing Dr. Doolittle, and other studies that a lot of animals are actually capable of language. And we just need to look at that in a scientific way. And when we do, sure enough, we find that, yes, they are capable of language, and they're capable of much more sophistication than we've given them credit for.
It's pretty arrogant of us to think that we're the only ones with language, isn't it?
It really is, but, you know, we humans have cornered the market on arrogance pretty much.
Yeah, we pretty much have. So, Con, I just have to say that I'm picturing your lab and this sophisticated audio recording equipment, maybe a couple lab assistants, research assistants from Northern Arizona University, and you all sitting around listening to these, like you describe them as chirp-like sounds. How many hours did you spend initially to decipher the first sounds? Or the first words, I should say.
Many, many hours deciphering the first sounds. But you have to also understand that technology has changed a lot. When I first started working with prairie dog sounds what I had available to me, and now it seems incredible thinking about it, what I had available to me was a big machine that kind of looked like, maybe something like a desktop blender or something like that, somewhat larger than that. And it had a rotating drum and a little wire thing that's attached to the rotating drum. And the drum went round and round, and the wire thing jiggled up and down, producing a picture of the sound waves that we had recorded. And now you can get something that analyzes sound waves digitally for probably less than $100. And it is an app on your phone or on your computer. And you can get so much more accuracy than we could initially with that little wire thing jiggling up and down, producing an image of the sound waves. So over time, technology progressed, and really it has been that progression over time that has allowed me to decipher these things that I was telling you about, because what we do now is we measure the frequency and time changes within an acoustic signal, put this into a computer. The computer does some very sophisticated statistics and tells us whether a coyote call is the same as or different from a domestic dog call. In the past, with these little wire things that jiggled up and down, the best that people could do is they could hold up this piece of paper and look at it and say, yeah, that kind of looks like the same thing as this other thing. And it was a very subjective kind of thing. But now we have the technology to do this in a very objective way. And that's really what's helping us unlock the key to animal languages in general, because we are able now to zoom in on this very sophisticated, very subtle differences that to our ear we may not necessarily hear. But the computer can identify this, and statistical programs can pick up these differences and tell us something about what it is that we're looking at that's just to our vision or to our ear we would totally miss.
So once you understand an adjective that may be for red shirt, you know, as a coyote is doing an alarm call describing a tall human with a red shirt and blue sneakers, once you get that adjective and it goes into the computer is going to be looking for that, something like that?
Yes, something like that. Initially, what the computer does is it tells us, okay, so red shirt, and this is a trivial point, but prairie dogs actually can't see red.
Okay.
The other colors. So they would see red as black, but that's fine. So,
sure.
The computer tells us, okay, well, there's this funny variation over here, there's this funny other variation over here, but it doesn't tell us what the cause of that is. And the way that we determine what that variation is that we do an experiment where
testing.
We send out somebody
right.
wearing a black shirt or a red shirt, and we see, okay, well, that variation shows up whenever we have that black shirt out there. Then we do another experiment where we send out somebody with blue sneakers, and we look, and okay, well, this other variation shows up whenever we have blue sneakers.
Right.
So it's a context-driven kind of thing. You know, we do experiments setting up specific contexts, and then within those contexts, the computer tells us, okay, well, here's this variation within that context. And so we know, okay, that's for red shirt. We know, okay, this other one is for blue sneakers.
Right. Interesting. So let's move to domestic dogs for a moment. What percentage of dog communication is nonverbal, and what percentage, well, the other side of it would be verbal?
Yeah, so right now, scientific experiments done primarily in Europe show that about 70% of dog communication is nonverbal and about 30% is verbal.
Okay. So give us an example of nonverbal.
Okay, so let's say that, let me give you an example of, from my own experience. When I had more time, I used to help people out by doing some behavioral consulting with pet problems that people might have had. And so here's one example. A man calls me and says, my dog is aggressive. He wants to bite me. Can you please come? So I come over, and here's this tall, bulky man who's speaking in a really deep voice. And he says, my dog really hates me. My dog wants to bite me. Let me show you. And he walks over towards this dog who is in a corner. And he says, good dog. And the dog looks up at him, and the dog's tail goes down, the ears go down, the mouth opens into sort of a snarl, showing the teeth. And the man says, see, the dog hates me. He wants to bite me. And then I have to explain to him, which usually takes about an hour or so, that no, the dog doesn't hate you. The dog doesn't want to bite you. The dog is afraid of you.
Yeah.
And the reason that the dog is afraid of you is that you backed him into a corner, you tower over him, you say, good dog, in what sounds like a growl to the dog. And if you just gave the dog some space and backed off and said, good dog, in kind of a whiny voice that dogs use to express pleasure, the dog would be fine.
Yeah.
And so the man tries that, and after a while I get a phone call saying, you know, you are absolutely right. I gave my dog space. I said, good dog, in a high-pitched voice. And suddenly my dog would come up to me, and he doesn't want to bite me anymore. So, you know, that's an example of how people misinterpret a lot of dog body language.
Right.
They make an assumption based on whatever they've heard from their friends or neighbors or whatever, and they assume that something is true, which it isn't. And so the more that we know about body language, the more that we know about vocalizations, the more we can say that these things are not true, and here is what really is true.
That's pretty interesting. You know, I think when I think about my two dogs, one clearly with his body language is saying, I need food right now. And he could be anywhere in the house, but he says it with his body language. The other one makes all of these strange noises, and I never know exactly what it is he wants. I might hire you for the one with all the different noises, but the other one, it's like, you know, they get their message across pretty well. And I would imagine that people in your sphere and who know about your work are you know, asking for these kind of fine-tuning or some tool to be able to tell themselves, right, what their animals are saying. What are they asking for mostly?
Well, it could be asking for a variety of different things. This is where it can be somewhat perplexing to people, you know, because some dogs just like to talk. They just like to vocalize. And so they could be vocalizing about things that make them happy. They could be vocalizing about things that annoy them. Some dogs tend to be somewhat more nervous, and so they tend to be more frightened of things,
sure,
of noises that you may not hear. Here's another example from when I was doing behavioral consulting. A person had a dog who would not go into the man's pickup truck. Dog would be fine in other cars, but he'd never go into the man's pickup truck. And the man was saying, well, he just doesn't want to ride with me. And I don't understand why he doesn't want to ride with me. And so I listened to this story, and then I said, okay, if he's fine with other cars, go and get your pickup truck, which was an older truck, go and get a tune-up and change the belts and change the spark plugs, and then come back and see if your dog will ride in the pickup truck. And sure enough, the dog could ride in the pickup truck after that. So the dog was picking up high-pitched sounds that the man couldn't hear, that none of us humans could hear, because dogs can hear roughly about four times more sound than we can. So he was picking up, the dog was picking up on the sound, and it was uncomfortable because it was loud and he could hear it, and sort of like, you know, constantly having a buzzsaw in your brain.
Interesting.
And after that, that solved the whole problem. So there's a whole bunch of different things that dogs could be responding to that we may not necessarily know until we try to get at the root of some of these things.
Yeah. Con, unfortunately, we are out of time, but we could talk to you forever. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Well, thank you, John and Lynn. I always enjoy talking to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Con. We'll talk to you soon.